It made me an animal, it's rules to the shit. I wrote me a manual, a step-by-step booklet for you to get your game on track, not your wig pushed back. Rule number uno, never let no one know how much dough you hold, cause you know that try to breed jealousy, especially if that man fucked up. Get your ass stuck up. Number two, never let them know your next move. Don't you know bad boys move in silence and violence? Take it from your highness. I done squeezed mad clips at these cats for they bricks.
This is Comics Therapy, episode 37. No reviews, just analysis. Up this week, two comics from April 9th, 2014. Ghost Rider number 2 and Great Pacific number 14. As always, we have your nerd confessions, and on the couch, we talked with writer Fabian Ronhell Jr. Just as a reminder, we never do reviews, but we do talk a lot, so there may be spoilers ahead.
When I was maybe 12, my half-sister decided that she was sick of me reading mostly superhero comics and handed me a few issues of Hellblazer. Suddenly, comics could do anything at all. It's part of why I write them. Adam P. Nave, signing off.
Welcome to Comics Therapy. Neither Aaron nor I are licensed therapists, so don't take anything we say as serious medical advice, especially this week. Our theme is, let's call it intervention, in the drug parlance. We're looking at two books that dabble a bit with the effects of drug use and abuse, which admittedly isn't a new topic for us either. Well, in terms of comics. I don't mean to speak about Aaron's alleged experiences in the wild days of his youth, or mine. We'll get into that in a bit.
In between comic segments, your very own nerd confessions, answering life's deepest geeky questions and celebrating what we love and what we snark about comics. This week, we asked you what comics blew your mind in a metaphorical sense, changing the way you view the world. It seemed like a better idea than asking what comics you've read under the influence. Every week, you can call, Skype, or email your confessions to us. The details are on the website, comicstherapy.com. Because catharsis is cool.
Friend, Tom Zimmer, or Victor Von Zoom, at Victor Von Zoom, as I'm known in the Twitterverse, here with this week's Nerd Confession. Sounds like this week you guys are advocating or celebrating the drug culture, a topic I know very little about, not hailing from the hippiedom of Pacific Northwest or San Fran. Be sure to wear Frisco's in your hair, Cisco. So what even is a psychedelic comic? According to Arrowhead, Flex Mentello fits securely in that description, but I didn't read that one, so I'll save that answer for another hip podcast that you're all raving about. I've read a number of, quote, trippy books in my time, everything from R. Crumb to J.M. DeMatteis to Alan Moore to Grant Morrison to Michael DeForge. But as far as something that has bunny ears, changed the way I look at the world, I would have to say Matt Kent's Revolver. Revolver resonated deeply with me because I had read it at the right time. I had been exploring this idea that we choose our own reality as a philosophical and psychological exercise. Something about the way this message was perfectly conveyed into a graphic novel really hit home. The idea that every day, every moment, we get to choose how to experience life, but then the unknown variables, which have multiple alternatives, are generally interpreted and assumed as a negative and catastrophic outcome, is a fear that keeps us from living fully. In Revolver, the character had two realities to choose from, and this comic book helped me with the paradigm shift that I have been exploring, an idea I believe that has made life more enjoyable. But as far as trippy or psychedelic, next time you hippies start doing your thing, may I suggest Sam Alden's Wicked Chicken Queen, or if meth is your jam, go ahead and give Johnny Ryan's Prison Pit a read. Love ya. Tom.
In between shows, you can find me on Twitter, at Andrea Schock, and Aaron, at Aaron Myers. The show account, which is entirely Aaron's fault, is at Comics Therapy.
Shared access?
No. No.
In theory.
In theory, but not in practice.
Well, but capabilities there.
Right. Aaron, we took our first week off ever last week. Do you want to talk about it, or just jump into other things?
Yeah, we can talk about it. I think we owe people an explanation. I think you owe people an explanation of why we failed.
Really?
No.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. It was both of us. I think we were both pretty tired.
I was pretty tired because of Emerald City.
Yeah, you were tired from having fun.
Right. And you?
I was tired because our dog died. So that's been hard in our house, but I don't want to be like a bummer out of the gate for people.
I don't want you to be a bummer out of the gate either, but I did ask you if you wanted to share that since you had kept us updated. And obviously we're all very, very sorry. And it was really rough to watch you guys deal with that when I was visiting. Not that I'm making this about me, but I'm just saying I have a lot of sympathy and much hugs for you and Chrissy and the boys.
Thank you. Yes, hard to, the hardest part is trying to help a four-year-old understand death.
Right.
Because it doesn't really work. I think as a 36-year-old, I don't understand death. But
I was just about to say that.
Yeah, but at four, you haven't been hardened by the ways of the world to where you could, I don't know, we can pretend to have ways of coping with it.
Right.
So it's also very hard to have two children in the house that you don't want to be like crying in front of when they don't understand why that would be. So you don't really get a time to grieve.
Sure.
It hasn't been a good time.
No. You sound better than you did last week. I'm glad that we took the week off. I think that was the right choice.
Thanks. I've been drinking a lot. I'm under the influence.
Right now?
Well, I mean, hardly. Two beers doesn't really, start the day.
Okay. I'm just saying it would be appropriate
That's
for
breakfast.
The theme and all. Right, right.
Yeah.
You're right,
like
though.
I'm going to talk on that.
Uh-huh. I was also very tired last week. It took me, like, all fucking week to recover from Emerald City. Because I, too, am old and cannot have, like, a 4 or 5 day stretch of not, observing my bedroom.
I'm not sleeping and drinking all the time.
Yes, exactly. But...
Poor. I feel sorry for you, kiddo.
It's rough. It's super rough, let me just tell you. But it was excellent, so.
Good. You want to give us any highlights or anything?
I don't know. I don't know if I have many shareable highlights. It was a very...
Gross.
No, I don't... God, I fucking hate you. It was just a super chill time. It was great to connect with people in person, and we had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm... jealous and happy for the time you got to have.
Oh, that was almost sincere.
Yeah, it was close.
I know. I felt a little...
All my emotional walls have been stripped away lately. It's hard to maintain the facade that I normally have.
Right. I got a lot of amazing art. So that was a fucking huge win for me for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It is nice to have that. It is... Gosh, maybe the closest thing that I can equate to your obsessive collecting... Although it's much more personal for me and much less obsessive, but it is...
Getting art?
Yeah, like having original art is... I get joy out of that artifact experience much more than I do, like, print comics, so...
Sure,
that's
sure.
All.
I mean, I'm looking currently at 16 original pages that I, stare at all day.
Right. You turn that into you being an asshole. I just want you to know. When you say it like that, it's like, yeah, everything's great, original art. 16. As soon as you drop the number 16, everybody hates you.
No. Well, I mean, does it help that I buy most of them before the artist, like, hits it big time, so I can buy them a lot cheaper than what they would ask for now?
So you're a hipster asshole. Got it.
Yeah. I'm into this stuff way ahead of you guys.
Right.
I was in the Manhattan Projects way before you guys.
Oh, that's right. You do have a really sweet page from Nick. That's cool.
No, I've got two pages.
Really?
Yep. I bought one page from him, and it took him 5 months to send it out, so he sent me two pages.
Oh, I vaguely recall that.
Mm-hmm. So that was perfectly fine with me.
Good job, Aaron. You win all the comics.
Thank you.
But
I wish.
Guess
someday.
Which one of us got to go to Emerald City?
It's good for you. By the time most people are probably going to hear this, I will... be at or have gone to line work.
That's awesome. That is this weekend.
Yes.
Sincerely, since we're on that topic, I hope that you have an excellent time. It looks like a pretty, pretty cool lineup.
Yeah, I think it'll be a lot of fun. I mean, it's, it's Portland, and Portland has a great group of independent creators, and a lot of them are going to be there, and it's free to get in, so you can't beat that.
Right.
And, like, the special guest is Michael DeForge, and I have a lot of his stuff.
Right.
And
have you read Ant Colony yet?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I actually read Ant Colony because I'm a hipster. I read it online before it was cool. But I have a print copy of it as well.
Well, I hope that it's a good day away from home. A good day to be thinking about other things.
Yeah, and it's small. It's 40 tables.
Right.
So that's, you know, that's smaller than probably any con I've ever gone to. Which makes, I'm interested to see how that'll be, because it's a lot more intimate.
You'll have to actually talk to people.
Well, I do that anyway. See, I actually make a plan when I go to a con.
I had a really good time at Emerald City, and I had no plan at all, so don't knock it.
Yeah, I also didn't see, I hardly saw any pictures of you with any creators.
You saw no pictures of me with any creators.
Well, right, or any mention of anything. I think you just spent the time drinking and eating, and I'm not even convinced you actually went into the convention.
That is a giant lie. I took all of Roddy's pictures. So every picture that you saw that he posted, that was me taking the picture. It's almost like I was actually there.
That's hearsay.
It's not. They're all on my phone.
Well, I'll have to inspect that. I need confirmation.
Okay. Anything else you want to talk about? We should acknowledge the fact that you saw Captain America 2 within a reasonable amount of time. Actually, yes, in a movie theater.
Good job. I even went for IMAX 3D.
So I've seen it in 2D and 3D now, and I have to say I preferred it in 2D.
I would tell people, if you're going to go see it, don't bother paying for a 3D, because it didn't seem to take advantage of that a lot.
Well, it wasn't filmed in 3D, for one, but at least in my experience, the action sequences in 2D, in like the standard print, were really beautifully shot. They were very clear, and I actually enjoyed them quite a bit, and I talked a tiny bit about that for the answer of the week on Two-Headed Nerd. But in 3D, it was a lot shakier for me, at least in my experience.
Huh.
And so having seen that after I saw the 2D, I would prefer the former to the latter.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. The only advantage for me to seeing it in the 3D, you know, wasn't the 3D. It was that the movie theater was like a third full. So you pretty much could sit where you wanted to.
Yeah.
Which I was kind of surprised by, but it just wasn't filled, and this is like second day, you know, of release, so.
Oh, you went on Saturday, right?
Yes.
So, Cass and I went Friday morning at 10, thinking it wasn't going to be very full, and that was a mistake.
Packed to the gills?
Absolutely. A lot of people playing hooky that day.
I think the other theaters were full. The other showings were full. There was only one showing for IMAX 3D. There's just one theater. There were like four other showings, though, regular 3D.
Well, this was regular 2D at 10 when there was a 3D at 10:30. So, but I mean, I was just wrong. It's fine. We got in. We had decent seats. No big deal. But when I saw it Monday evening at like 10:30 in 3D, there was nobody there.
Huh. Wow. Well, lucky you.
Right. It's not a competition.
It's always a competition.
Okay. Speaking of that, then, the only other thing I wanted to touch on, because
I'm already going to get you ahead of, this is ridiculous. This came out of our interview conversation. It came off the cuff. Like how I didn't research it.
I told you at the time that I was going to nail you for it because it was so bullshit.
All right. Tell me your numbers, lady.
In like a half an hour, you guys are going to hear Aaron say to Fabian and I that women make up 10% of comics readers. I think
comics
actually,
readers that go to the comic store.
You said no. Your whole point was that men are 90% of readers.
At the comic store.
I don't know how you can actually measure something like that.
I can because I hang out at the comic store, hanging out with my bros.
Little, therefore irrelevant sample size. What I have for you is data from February, about 6 weeks ago, that says that women make up 46.7% of comics readers. 46.7.
No.
Yes.
No way.
Absolutely. 46.7% of all comics readers are women.
Me and my dogs don't agree.
Okay, well, do your dogs take sample sizes from, like, all over the United States, all over the world, and actually put together actual accumulation of data, and then extrapolate from that to get a legitimate percentage estimate?
Look, I don't need your fancy numbers. I'm telling you what I see with my eyes.
Okay, so we can all agree that you are wrong and I am right.
I find that number to be interesting, and I don't think it's probably accurate, but it's probably, I think it's...
you don't think it's accurate because anecdotally you feel like disagreeing, But the fact is that women are reading a wide variety of books and reading it in a wide variety of ways. And yes, sure, you're right. They've shown a predilection towards digital, but that doesn't mean that your 90% number for your average local comic book shop is accurate at all. It's totally bullshit, and this is me calling you on it.
I think it's probably much closer to 90% than it is to 50%.
Clarify that. What is much closer to 90 than 50? Walking into a physical store or reading in general?
Not reading in general.
Because I'm not going to argue with you about a physical store, because there are so many reasons for that, some of which could be that the store itself is bullshit.
Yeah, you're not going to get any argument from me. So during our conversation, maybe it didn't come across like this in the conversation.
No, and you were baiting me, and I'm rising to that, and I know that.
Yeah, because you can't, because you're not better than this.
Wait. Because why?
You're not better than this. You took the bait, hook, line, and sinker.
I did. Because I honestly, Aaron, just like all show banter aside, I grow so weary of this argument because it is impossible for me not to get defensive. I feel like I have to explain and justify something that should be just accepted.
No, my point in the conversation, and maybe this didn't come out, but let me finish my words.
Okay.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Was that on a Wednesday at the rack, the people there, the majority, not even the majority, the vast majority are still male. Not that women don't read comics. Women read comics digitally. They'll order trade paperbacks or they'll buy them online, you know, to have them delivered. But I think the majority, and this doesn't mean everyone, of comic book shops are not friendly to women, and it's not something women feel comfortable going into.
So that's a whole separate issue and a whole separate problem that we didn't talk about with Fabian, but that I'm actually interested in exploring further, although not just from your experiences and not just from mine. I'm getting like more uppity about this because it's bothering me more and more, because I'm hearing more and more people saying the same thing and experiencing the same thing. And that's why I can't just let it go, even when you're deliberately baiting me just for, because
but,
it's fine.
But I'm not saying that women shouldn't go to, I want women to go feel, it's a place of business. Everyone should feel comfortable going there and getting it. But we, like in our conversation, we're talking about the covers that appeal, you know, to a male audience and the different publishers that kind of put that out. Doesn't mean that only men buy that, but it means that what makes everyone comfortable to go into a store, or what is more geared towards men. Doesn't mean like every person who goes into a Hustler store is a man. But you know what? It's marketed to men.
But the very fact that you're making a comparison between Hustler and comic books is the root of the problem. And from a much larger industry perspective, that's why the growth isn't moving in the direction that it needs to be. Because it's self-alienating. It's self-fulfilling prophecy. The younger audiences aren't getting pulled in. The education to the younger audiences isn't happening. And when you have predominantly male-dominated industry, comics are just one of many that would be like an appropriate way to describe the situation. The result is that over time, you're losing audience because you're not doing enough to bring in new people, new readers, new.
But you're already saying you're not losing audience. You're just losing audience in the retail space.
Right. I said that's a different issue, a different problem.
Because because what you're saying is women are reading comics more than ever.
That is absolutely true. And all you had to do was walk around the con floor 2 weeks ago to see that. The diversity of attendees and diversity of creators, in terms of gender at least. Other representation is a whole separate conversation in and of itself. But in terms of gender representation, solid, solid as hell. And maybe it is a matter of comfort in person rather than ordering online or going perhaps not on a Wednesday, because Wednesday is when all the assholes are going to be there. I used to do that. I used to go late in the day on Wednesday, or I'd go Thursday morning instead.
Yeah, okay.
So that is not a reflection on me. That's a reflection on, you know, those guys who don't want to share.
And to use you as a sample size of one, you don't even go to a store anymore.
This is a true fact.
So, you know, I don't even know what the point of this argument is, other than what I think out of the conversation, what my intention was that, and the problem is, I know there are lots of good stores that strive for equality and to make it a space that everyone should want to go to.
Absolutely.
And in terms of retail, those are the stores that will survive and the rest will go away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could look at it in the same way of like stores that refuse to acknowledge, you know, segregation or something like that. It's like, fine, but this is the way of the world and you're not going to survive in this economy. So that's fine. There's also, in terms of the creation too, there are publications and public, you know, companies that publish comics that cater to a particular, you know, group of people.
Sure. What's your point?
So that's all. That it's not going to be something that, say, you know, a particular publisher that publishes comics for men, a lot of women aren't going to feel comfortable looking at those comics.
But I don't think that there's anything wrong with a diverse range of content that doesn't appeal to everybody. I'm not saying that either. I'm saying that you have to acknowledge that when almost half of your audience is female, then if less than half is going to purchase it in the store, which was what your original argument, you know, claims to be, mm-hmm. then there's something wrong with the store.
Sure.
And
I agree.
There's not something wrong with that 46.7% of readership that happens to be female.
Yeah. How did you get that out of what I was saying?
You were so kind of jerky about it when we talked to Fabian.
No, I want women to be able to go in and buy comics in a store they feel comfortable in.
Okay.
Why would I... Did I make it seem like it was exclusionary? Like, the comic book shop is for guys, and sorry, women, you can go get them elsewhere?
A little bit.
No, you're crazy.
Also a little bit.
Yeah, you're super crazy, because that was nothing like what I was saying. I was just merely making an observance that still the popular... You know, the people who turn out on a Wednesday are still
shop.
The majority of... No, I would say our shop, my shop, is probably an aberration because... It's definitely more than, you know, maybe 70% male.
Okay.
We have a lot of women that come in because I was saying, you know, because it's it's close to campus, so we have a lot of people, you know, students that come in.
I haven't edited the interview yet, but I'll be really interested to go back and listen to what you said because I remember specifically you were talking about how, like, the proximity to campus increased the number of students that came in, but I thought that was actually still your point, that even under those circumstances, the numbers were skewed heavily.
See, the problem is you're not listening to me.
I rarely do.
Like, most women just want to, they have their agenda.
Yep.
And they just go forward with it. They don't listen.
Yep.
You know, so whatever.
Man, I missed you. Taking a week off just like gets me all fired up to just fucking school you on everything.
You know, whatever. I'm glad we got to talk about this because maybe it helps me clarify, because if that's the way I came off, I don't want this to turn into like a inner circle kind of thing. Jesus Christ. God damn it.
You want to talk
down.
About comics?
I guess. All right, let's talk about comics.
Okay.
Hey, the comics run that blessed my life was Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol. I mean, despite the difficult art and sometimes disjointed storytelling, all the concepts made me see the world in a whole new way. I also love Rachel Pollack's run right after, which I think is a yet undiscovered gem. They both dealt with issues of the body, the mind, and the sex in such novel and crazy ways. Oh, yeah. Cheers, Pedro.
Our first book this week is Ghost Rider number 2, written by Felipe Smith, with art by Trad Moore, colors by Val Staples, and lettering by Joe Caramanga. Ghost Rider is published by Marvel Comics.
Okay, so this is from the recap in issue 2. Teenager Robbie Rise lives on East LA gang turf and is the sole caretaker of his disabled younger brother, Gabe. All Robbie wants to do is escape their living hell of a neighborhood and provide a better, safer life for his little brother. Robbie borrowed a car from the garage he works for to enter a race with enough prize money to grant his wish, but the car had precious cargo stashed in its trunk. Cargo a paramilitary cartel wanted. Robbie was shot dead and his car set on fire, but the car had more than contraband in it. It was haunted, and now so is Robbie. Also, pretty sure that's Robbie Reese, but I can't pronounce and read at the same time, which is why I make you do all the names.
Yeah, because I'm so good at it.
So, here's Ghost Rider. It's a new Ghost Rider. It's a different Ghost Rider, which is great for me because I've never read Ghost Rider in my life.
But you understand Ghost Rider is the spirit of vengeance.
Yes, I do understand some, like, basic tenets of the character, and also I read two issues, and so therefore I'm okay with where the story is going now.
Yeah, and you know who the traditional, quote-unquote, like, Ghost Rider has been in the past?
Do I?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you've heard the name Johnny Blaze.
Nicolas Cage?
Yeah, that's right. The one. I mean, right. Those are perfect representations of the... of the character, the excellent movies, like, God, she can't spend a better 2 hours of your life. That's for sure.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, honest, this may be controversial, but most Ghost Rider comics have not been that great.
Yes, that is the impression that I have gotten.
I still have a fond spot in my heart for the whole Midnight Sun stuff of the 90s.
Okay.
Because that was stuff I read, you know, kind of at that tender golden age, but it's not good.
That's fine.
Yeah, and even the original stuff is not particularly good. He's just a cool character.
He usually has a motorcycle, yes?
He always has a motorcycle.
And now he has a car.
Now he has a car.
And it's a fucking sweet car, too.
Well, the thing is, like, it's funny because, like, you saw some people kind of, like, grousing about this, like, he doesn't have his car, you know, where's his chains and everything else, and it doesn't really matter in the end. He doesn't have his motorcycle. He has his car. He doesn't, you know, have all his traditional stuff. Other than that, I don't know. Other than that, he kind of looks like he normally does. But it's
Flaming
like...
Flaming Skull is kind of, like...
Sure, I mean, that's the important part.
Right.
And, like, I think the consciousness, like, in a lot of the old books, and I'm not a ghostwriter expert at all, other than, you know, I like the character and I haven't loved most of the stuff I read. Mm-hmm. But there's some great art and some, you know, especially in some of, like, the Bronze Age stuff. And there's that sweet Ghost Rider, like, glow-in-the-dark cover from, like, 1992.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's like, I don't care. This character has needed a reboot for a long time. And they've kind of tried to do, like, Jason Aaron had a pretty decent run, like, not too long ago. Still, it was, you know, it wasn't great.
Feels a little forced in the, like, Sam Alexander Nova kind of way, but I am more interested in at least Robbie's persona because of, he's very sympathetic, right? His situation is very sympathetic, and his exploration of his new powers is sort of interesting to me, sure. The, like, larger environment that he is part of and that his brother is part of, I find to be profoundly depressing. And honestly, more than most things that might pull me out of reading this book. Because it is a life that they are living and that they are sort of like stuck in that is not entertainment.
Okay.
So
sure.
So if comics are an escape, and if comics are about, you know, fantasy in the lowercase f kind of way, reading something that is maybe a little bit too real is, and I know how kind of absurd that sounds given that we're talking about a Ghost Rider comic, but like it's very sad, and that's not necessarily always what I want to read in a comic. That's all.
Sure. I mean, the thing about Ghost Rider is it's the spirit of vengeance. He's righting now wrongs and injustices, you know, to bring souls to hell for the devil.
Right. And so...
So, sorry. There's going to be a lot of depressing stuff that happens.
Well, but specifically with Robbie and Gabe. And then
well,
we
to
have...
become the Ghost Rider, though, and to become that spirit of vengeance, something bad has to happen.
It wasn't even that he got murdered that I have a problem with.
But the reason, I think the reason, like, you get the power is because of the murder and what you have to avenge.
Sure. So the circumstances of his life and his death are what kind of grants him access to this. I get it. It's still like a really rough thing to read. That's all. I want to talk about the story more. I want to talk about the kind of larger implications in the story.
Okay, go ahead.
I had more difficulty with this, with the premise in this particular issue in terms of the, like the date rape drug than I thought I was going to.
But they are, it's meant to be, it's meant to evoke that kind of like the vulnerability and then the, you know, it's the vengeance stuff.
It's, and sure. And it didn't result in anything. Maybe it's because, okay, so what set me off this morning? Did you, let's do a complete 180. Did you read about Invincible 110?
I did not read about it. I read it. I didn't read about it.
Okay.
What did I miss?
I don't know. There's like a big rape scene in the middle of Invincible 110. Yes? No?
Yes.
Okay. I had a lot of problem with that. I had a really, really hard time with it. And so, honestly...
Why? Why, though?
That has colored my entire day.
Okay.
And so, then when I read Ghost Rider 2, and I'm like, oh, really? This is the kind of drug that we're talking about here? This is the way that we're demonstrating power? And you're absolutely right. I'm way more sensitive about it today than I probably would be under other circumstances.
Okay, that's fine. But we're not reviewing it. But what about, what did you read about Invincible that is so upsetting?
Oh, so I didn't even read the issue. I read an article about the issue that talked about the gender reversal and showed the art. I had a really hard time with the art. So
we should not maybe not talk about that because
We're not going to talk about it.
That is too like there's no good that comes from that conversation.
Yeah, there's absolutely, and I'm not willing to actually have more of a conversation about it than we are right now. But I'm just giving you some context for why then when I 3 hours later sat down to read Ghost Rider 2 and thinking like, we've got this kind of growing theme with these pink pills and like, oh, isn't this fun? This week we're going to talk about drugs and haha. Yeah. Okay. So what kind of drugs are they? And then ultimately, it's not that at all. Ultimately, we've got the like Mr. Hyde, like monster transformation, blah, blah, blah. Everything is fine in comic book land. But my first reaction on that, those like two couple of pages when like before we got to that point was, are you fucking kidding me? Like, this is what we're doing in this book right now. And that's all. So there's your context. And I don't have much more to add to it, except that I'm glad that that's not the way that we went.
That's fine. That's there. And that makes sense. Now, see, so I wasn't off. I wasn't wrong.
No, you know me too well to just assume that I'm a spaz for no reason.
There's always a reason.
There's always a reason.
You want to talk about our next book?
We can talk about the art in this one, though. Okay, because you're right. It is
very different. I like it. I like it a lot.
It's lovely, and it helps very much in, I don't know, the movement of the book, some intensity. So, three cheers to the art team. Absolutely.
Did I
ruin the entire conversation by being a spaz? I think I did.
Yes. So let's move on.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You have another opportunity to ruin the conversation.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Hashtag nerd confession. What comics made you think about the world in a new way? Daredevil the Man Without Fear, number 227. When your job is destroying another man's life, even if it's really nice work, don't sign it. Sandman number 4, don't hang out in 24-hour diners. Saga 14, for real this time, you're lovable no matter what. Wilfie.
Our second book is Great Pacific number 14, written by Joe Harris with art by Martin Morazzo, coloring by Tizza Studio, and lettering by Michael David Thomas. Great Pacific is published by Image Comics.
The new Texas settlement has attracted people from around the world looking to work on the Plastic Nation's vast terraforming operations. Immigrants, laborers, and dreamers have flocked to seek their fortunes and stake their claims. But like most places where pioneers toil to tame and build, vice has followed, along with crime, addiction, and dysfunction. Now, after settling the Great Pacific garbage patch, risking everything and losing plenty, Chaz Worthington wrestles with the scourge of drug addiction, prevention, and policy.
So I especially liked this issue. This is sort of this culmination of, like, at this point, the, New Texas is a third world country.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, it's also very Western. Western in the kind of Wild West outlaw sense, as opposed mm-hmm. to Western versus Eastern.
Uh-huh. No, yeah, for sure. It's like this fledgling, this fledgling country that has, it's starting to show its, I guess a nation shows its nationhood by its underground, its black markets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a lot of ways. So, we're really getting that glimpse and the hypocrisy of leadership, that first class versus the upper classes versus the lower classes.
Right. I think one of the smartest things that Harris did with this book is jumping us ahead so that we didn't have to see all of the initial building, but we can get right into the nitty gritty of all of the shit that happens when you put 700 and some people on this totally fake island in the middle of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And we get into all of the vice. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, and it's sort of that commentary on that people always want to check out no matter what it is.
Yeah, yeah. I thought this issue was interesting for two reasons. Chaz actually stands up and says in his cabinet meeting that he doesn't have a problem with it if people do it on their own time. The only reason why he's pissed off is because it's affecting, like, the actual work process.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's an interesting attitude, one that is not terribly far away from my own. But I also think that we go, like, way in the opposite direction then with his response.
Mm-hmm.
Is like, well, fuck everything. Nobody gets to have it then. And these are the rules and you have to deal with them.
But it also shows, like, how inexperienced he is in this leader. I mean, this is another example of how he's sort of winging it as a leader.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's terrible.
He's stumbling through, and every opportunity almost becomes like, every success is almost in spite of himself. But I think with every success and failure, he's learning a little bit more about, this throwing off the yoke of the Western tyranny as it starts out, to how we keep approaching that closer and closer, as time goes on.
Do you, it's interesting that you're using words like success, because I don't know. I feel like he's not, everything is by the seat of his pants.
Sure, but we've gone from planting a flag in a pile of garbage to actually having an established community.
This book is nothing like what I thought it was going to be when I first started reading it, by the way. And I've been reading this one since the very beginning.
Yeah, me either. But I've been hooked since the very beginning, too.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's awesome. I think the it has just enough science fiction elements to, and kind of like magical realism without getting too into that. But then the like layer of political bullshit on top of it, I think is pretty awesome. You're right. He's like sort of an ineffective, almost bumbling leader, and yet he has a lot of power. And so I thought in this issue, like, his abuse of that power and his response to something else having power over his constituents was very revealing.
It also shows this hypocrisy, too.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Because obviously his decisions and his mind is clouded by his own addiction now.
Well, so that's a big reveal. Giant spoiler. Good job, Aaron.
But we already tell people there would be.
When does that happen?
Deal with it. That happens in this issue.
That's
the reveal at the very end.
But when in the timeline has that happened to him?
I don't know what you mean.
When was he first under the influence of the...
That I don't know. And I think we'll find out more about that next issue.
Okay.
I'm guessing.
Okay.
But obviously, it didn't just happen.
You don't think so?
No, because I forget the character's name, but she...
Zoe?
Yes. I mean, she's obviously disgusted with him because of... She knows about this, you know, the hypocrisy of his actions.
I don't know if I agree. In fact, I may totally, totally disagree. And
is this a 90% situation?
No. It's a reading between the lines situation. That I'm not convinced that it was an intentional exposure on his part.
Okay. That's fine. I mean, I am under the influence, so my cognitive facilities are not as sharp as they could be.
And I have already demonstrated that I am an emotional wreck today, so what do I know?
Yeah, so this whole show is a disaster.
Really, the theme instead of intervention is like, women are crazy, hi, and Aaron's drinking.
Bitches be crazy, damn, hand me a beer.
Wow. Good job.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Thank you.
So how long does this continue, do you think?
Our drinking and your craziness?
No, back to the comic.
All right.
Because I think that this could be... I actually don't want it to disappear. I think that it's a... like an underworld element to a little society that is already essentially an underworld. It could be kind of fun.
It also could be very useful to a fledgling government too.
Yeah, straight up. And I thought that there were some very strong indications that the cabinet was also under the influence. Members of the cabinet, especially
absolutely
the scientists.
Possible.
So I think I guess I sort of hope that we don't clean this up right away because I dig it.
Yeah,
as long as it just doesn't turn into a date rape drug, apparently. I have problems with that, but I don't have problems with recreational use, so there you go.
That's all right, hippie. Good.
Maybe I should move to Eugene.
You should. He'd fit in. you live in San Francisco. It's no different.
Are you kidding? Have you read all of the stuff about how terrible San Francisco is? How it's like one... gentrified neighborhood after another, and all the hippies are being displaced, and it's like all of us new arrivals that are at fault.
I agree.
Yeah, so I gotta get out of here if I'm gonna retain my bohemian roots.
I don't know if we need you here, though.
Another
California transplant?
Oh my god, I would go crazy there.
Thank you very much.
No, you guys are delightful, and I love your family, mostly your wife, but I would go crazy in Eugene, straight up.
I think we established you've already lost your mind, though.
I'm not doing a really good job of, like, anything today, am I?
Nope. Are you ready to move on to our interview?
Yeah, I'll shut up now. It was a good interview, except for when I yelled at you. Sorry about that.
That's all right. You are wrong. I was right. Just remember that. And enjoy, everyone.
This week on The Couch, we're hanging out with writer Fabian Ranhal Jr. Fabian is the creator of Doc Unknown, a superhero action-adventure series, and he's lately gotten a lot of attention due to his consistent success self-publishing his comics through Kickstarter and Comixology Submit. You can also find Doc Unknown short stories as a backup in Five Ghosts, published by Image Comics. I chatted with Fabian a bit at Emerald City, although I may have been drinking at the time, so he probably thinks I'm an idiot. Fabian, thank you for giving me a chance to redeem myself by talking with us today.
Yeah, no problem. I'm stoked. I'm excited to talk to you guys.
Awesome.
Well, you haven't asked how much Andrea's had to drink today, too.
I was at a birthday party for a toddler, Aaron.
Oh, of course, then you get drunk.
Implication that there would be anything suspect going on.
Are you like, are you pizza drunk? That'll happen. Toddler thing.
Sure.
No. I mean, I actually had a couple beers and a couple shots of Jameson, which is not that different from what I was drinking last weekend at Emerald City. But this was in a much more controlled environment, and it was several hours ago. We're going to be just fine.
We'll
so
see.
this is like a normal Sunday for you, just, you know, getting drunk.
It kind of makes it sound like it, but actually it's not.
I think we need to have can we just turn this into an intervention, Aaron?
That actually is what, you know, that was part of my plan. I mean, yes, we want to interview, but I mean, Andrea, come on. You've been drinking for a week now.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, let's get serious, guys.
Very serious. We have to talk about comics.
Yeah. Let's start. Oh, yeah, okay. Well, let's start with a brief rundown of what you've been up to. So, like, as of today, Doc Unknown Volume 2 Kickstarter just hit $10,000, or probably above that at this point, almost double your original goal, and it ends in a couple days. So where can listeners find Volume 1 and some of your other work in the meantime?
A lot of my older stuff is out of print, so they're kind of SOL on that front.
eBay.
No, but no, yeah, Volume 1 is actually only being sold exclusively at, like, cons and, you know, on the Kickstarter right now. Like, if people go to the Volume 2 Kickstarter right now, there's, like, a reward level to get the first volume and the Boss Snake one shot, which is the last thing that we Kickstarted back in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
So and, neither of those are available through Comixology?
Oh, well, volume the first four issues that make up Volume 1, yeah, they can read that on Comixology. Sorry, yeah.
Okay.
And there's another book on Comixology called Los Muertos that I wrote, another comic, and yeah, that one's on there through Comixology Submit. I have a short story in the Liberator Volume 1 trade that comes out this week. Trying to think. Yeah, because
like
awesome. I said, a lot of
that
stuff.
That was good timing on our part then. Go us.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, good job. Yeah, that's a good chance if you interview me. You know, I got a new book coming out that week anyway. Just kidding. That's totally not true. But, yeah, and then, yeah, the Doc Unknown backups and Five Ghosts going on right now. Like, if you were to go to your local shop and find, you know, some Five Ghosts back issues, or starting with number 7, there would be some Doc Unknown in the back of that.
Yep.
Awesome. Okay, yeah. So we mentioned Kickstarter. We're going to talk candidly about Kickstarter. I'm assuming that you're maybe getting tired of talking about it, actually. But
No, not at all, not at all. I mean, there's a lot of people that, you know, probably don't even know, you know, who I am. I mean, I know there are a lot of people that don't know who I am, but that, you know, would like to, you know, hear about it or whatever. And then I know there's a lot of other creators that are still, you know, they might be apprehensive about wanting to try and start a Kickstarter. A lot of people that I talk to are like, man, you know, I have this book, but I don't think I would, you know, get funded on Kickstarter because nobody knows who I am. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, totally there like a year ago. And, you know, so far it's been going pretty good. So, I mean, I have all sorts of stuff I can talk about as far as Kickstarter goes.
It's clear listening to you and really so many of the other creators who are very open about the process on Twitter primarily, that it's not easy. It's not a guarantee. There's all of the prep and marketing going into the campaign, the follow-up with the rewards, and then obviously the actual creation of the work. And you've also been really open about the fact that you paid a lot of money out of pocket for Doc Unknown Volume 1 and the Boss Snake one-shot. But it's still something that people are turning to. It's a venue outside of traditional publishing. What are your thoughts about the existing model and like how it actually dovetails with the industry, or what could change to make it better?
Well, I mean, I think Kickstarter is really one of the only ways for like guys like me who, you know, who have a book out and maybe publishers either aren't looking at it or just straight up rejecting it. But, you know, a lot of like, I mean, like for me personally with Doc Unknown, I kind of felt like Doc Unknown was, you know, good enough to get, I mean, I didn't want to give up on it. And so, you know, like you said, I ended up funding Volume 1 out of my own pocket, you know, just doing all sorts of stuff, like getting a second job, getting some credit cards and maxing out, getting some loans, all sorts of stuff, you know, and selling, you know, selling old comics. And but, you know, then by the time that was over, I felt that we had, you know, we had shown people that we knew what we were doing. And so I was like, you know, I bet if we did a Kickstarter for a one shot, you know, featuring Boss Snake, one of Doc's villains, you know, just keep the goal kind of low, you know, just like the bare minimum that we needed. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I figured, you know, we had enough of a track record at that point that, you know, people would, you know, feel confident in backing us. And, but yeah, so I think, you know, for like people like me, that the Kickstarter is really one of the only ways to do it, other than, you know, just going into massive, massive debt.
Yeah. That was a pretty big risk to basically mortgage your life to put out your dream. You know, is that, to take out credit cards, to get a second job, to put that kind of heart and soul into a project that could, you know, could not go anywhere. Was that a first for you?
No, that's kind of pretty much what I've been doing this entire time.
That's what I'm curious. Well, some people are risk takers because they, you know, they believe in themselves or they believe in that dream. And other people, it's like, that's a major hurdle to get over.
Yeah. I had spent my 20s being in a band and stuff, like playing in bands and going on tour. So I had already been through the whole, like, I need to make my dream happen. No one else is going to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's why when I started doing comics, I kind of hit the ground running. I saw a lot of parallels between self-publishing and, you know, being in a band and booking your own tours and, you know, booking your own shows and trying to get, you know, signed as opposed to getting published with comics and stuff. So I think I kind of, like, you know, knew what to do or what to try to do.
And maybe that that fear of rejection was pretty tempered at that point, you know, dealing with the music industry too.
Yeah. And then whenever I started doing comics, you know, I had a little bit of luck, like pretty much right off the gate. I put out a few books with a company called 215 Inc. Mm. And so that went okay. But after a while, I was kind of like thinking that I wanted to, you know, start trying to do books with like bigger publishers and trying to get a bigger audience. And I figured if I wasn't, I mean, this is going to sound bad, but if like, if your book isn't coming out with like, you know, I mean, obviously Marvel and DC doesn't count. We're not talking about that stuff. We're talking about creator owned stuff. Mm-hmm. If your book isn't coming out with like Image or Dark Horse, you know, Boom / Archaea, and IDW, it's like, I mean, it's kind of invisible. Like, I mean, yeah, you could get some orders and previews and stuff, but like, you know, you really have to like know what you're looking for, really, to, you know, flip through every single page of previews, which I know you do. You know, I know, I mean, I do too, but like, you know, not everybody's as
no, I'd say the vast majority of people have never even looked at the previews or know what a pre-order system is, you know, who buy comics.
They just show up and get whatever's on the shelf that looks cool or whatever.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's just different levels of intensity as far as like, you know, being a comic book fan.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, so I mean, like, so my point is, if I was going to not do the book with, you know, one of those five, you know, kind of bigger indie publishers, then I figured I would just do it myself. That way I would have total control of when it comes out and, you know, how many I print and stuff like that. Because that stuff had kind of...
Your approach to Kickstarter, though, has been very modest. You set your goals. I mean, they're very attainable, but you're open about the fact that you're covering your artists' costs, but
yeah,
not so much talking about supporting yourself this way.
Oh yeah, no, this isn't. I mean, yeah, I haven't made, you know, any money off of comics. I've been doing comics for like 3.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the money that I make, you know, just goes to making more comics. Like,
right.
I mean, I still have a day job. My day job is, you know, a pretty like good one. So, you know, luckily I have had, you know, some disposable income in the past in order to do these other comics. But, you know, after three years, it's like, you know, this is getting too much. I can't justify this kind of spending. And, you know, it's never gotten to the point where I was like, oh, should I buy diapers or should I make a comic? Like, I make sure all that, you know, all the responsibility stuff is like, you know, first priority. Mm-hmm. The comic book thing is just like, is secondary.
What about sites like Patreon, or I don't know how to say it. Is that how you say it? I think so.
Yeah. I actually just heard about that site like last week. I haven't really looked into it.
There are others, but I mean, basically, unlike Kickstarter, where you're funding a single campaign, a single project, it's more of like an ongoing support site. Hmm. And do you think that has a place in more of the kind of self-publishing realm for, I guess, people who are slightly off the radar of even the independent publishers that you mentioned, but who might have like a niche with, you have fans who have supported the first volume, now the second volume, who have like continued to follow you, and that is only growing for you. And so something that kind of caters to more of an ongoing, you know, checking in with you, constantly supporting you sort of system, I wonder if that might be a direction that makes sense, maybe not for you, but like just in an additional venue within the self-publishing corner of the industry.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's an overabundance of ways to get your books in. Like, there's all sorts of things you can do. You know, like, I was actually thinking about getting the first volume of Doc Unknown going as like a webcomic for people that had never downloaded it on Comixology, Comixology, or had seen me at a con or whatever, like maybe just as a way to get a new audience. Jim Zub, the guy who does Skull Kickers, has mentioned doing that, and apparently that's like, you know, another way for him to get like a different kind of audience. So I was actually kind of thinking about that. But yeah, between Comixology Submit and Kickstarter, I mean, you know, it's going pretty good, but I mean, it could always go better, I guess.
Sure.
I mean, I guess I'll check it out. I mean, I'm not like, I don't know. I think Kickstarter has like, you know, it's like the main one. You know, there's other sites like Indiegogo, but where, you know, Indiegogo works to where, like, you know, no matter how much you raise, you will get that, as opposed to Kickstarter, where if you don't reach your goal, you don't get anything. But yeah, like, and like you had mentioned, I do kind of set it for like the bare minimum. I kind of set it to where I can get the art, you know, paid for. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, if worse comes to worse, we just make them enough money to get the art paid for, then I'll go get another credit card, or I'll go, I'll figure out a way to get, you know, the lettering and the printing and shipping. Last time, whenever we did the Boss Snake one shot, you know, I was just like, oh, cool. And it went really well, like really fast. Like, we funded in like 13 hours, but we'd only asked for like 2,500, but still it just like went really well. And so I was like, well, if we get like 200%, we'll do like another Doc Unknown comic, like an anthology type one shot. And but the problem with that was, you know, obviously I brought in different artists so that it would get done, you know, as fast as Boston. I couldn't have Ryan do it because Ryan was doing Boss Snake.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up having to pay, you know, some more artists to do more. And what I'm saying is, I ended up spending a lot of money trying to get that stretch goal achieved.
Right.
And so that just added to the printing cost, added to the overall weight, so that, you know, made shipping go up. And then I also underestimated international shipping, which I think that's, you know, like the biggest.
That seems to be the common downfall. Yeah.
I mean, it's insane.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, man, borders are, I mean, what's going on with those borders?
Yeah, no, it's like quadrupled in the last few years.
Yeah. I mean, they know what they're doing. I think they're trying to like, they're trying to get back at people for just, you know, primarily using email. So they got to like jack up their like,
maybe
they're like, yeah, their packaging stuff or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to talk too much shit, because then they're going to like, you're like, oh, this is the guy. I just
well,
like,
let's talk about the like global ship. Let's get into this global shipping conspiracy.
Yeah.
Wait, this is the part where everybody's going to shut it off. It's not going to be because of.
Yeah, we just lost some post office workers. And like, oh, this guy. I think it's our fault. We're just doing our jobs. but yeah, so I ended up actually spending about $1,600, even though we were like 300% funded. I still ended up spending about, you know, $1,600 out of pocket to get the rewards shipped off, which, you know, that's nobody's fault but mine. And but, you know, luckily during the campaign, I was still saving money, you know, anywhere I could, just in case, because I didn't want to end up being like one of those Kickstarters that doesn't deliver because they ran out of money.
Mm-hmm.
And because I knew, because pretty much like the Boss Snake Kickstarter was a way to kind of test the Kickstarter waters, you know, for me. I was like, could I do one? I think I have enough, as small as it is, enough of an audience at this point to maybe, you know, have a crowdfunding platform, you know, fund this book instead of me having to do it myself. And, you know, and luckily I was right. But I knew that if we didn't, you know, deliver, and we, if we didn't deliver like the product or even like a good product, you know, that we wouldn't be able to do another one, which was my overall goal, was like my secret plan. Was it just
to get to volume two?
Yeah. To do another volume of Duck Unknown. I was like, oh, we'll try Buff Snake. It's kind of like almost like no risk, you know? I mean, and it was a way for a lot of people to get the first volume of Duck Unknown because, you know, people who didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the whole time I was like, you know, if this goes good, you know, in a few months, we're going to try and do volume two. And, you know, so I was pretty nervous. I was like, okay, is lightning going to strike twice? Like, are we going to be able to do this a second time? And, you know, luckily, like you said, we're about almost double our goal. We broke 10,000 yesterday, and so
yeah,
it's pretty awesome.
Has it been really sort of fun and gratifying to like meet people at cons who you've been talking to online or who had supported the various Kickstarters, and then to actually like touch base with them? Because it's a different kind of development of fan base in that regard.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, it's been like really, and that's only happened like recently. Because you know, the first Kickstarter was just like in October.
Right.
By the time I was sending stuff out around Christmas time, which was really poor planning on my part. You know, I was sending out these Kickstarter packages, and there was like huge lines of people sending out Christmas gifts to their relatives or whatever. I was like, oh man, that was dumb. I should have realized when I was gonna be sending these things out. And like, man, post office people just like hated me. Like, oh, this fucking guy, this guy with all his identical packages and stuff. But can you hear me? I feel like my voice or my phone just started sounding weird.
No, we can hear you.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, that's the CIA is tapping the line now because we started talking about shipping conspiracies, but we can still hear you, too.
And you know what I think about the moon landing?
my question, you know, my observance for Kickstarter, too, is it's a bit of a like a cult of personality. Like, obviously, you have to deliver a product that people are going to enjoy, but you have to sell that product, and part of that is having a following in place too. Like, I see Kickstarters. I mean, every once in a while, it seems to catch, you know, the wind, and somebody with say 100 followers on Twitter can have a successful Kickstarter. But it seems that the reality is you have to have a base of friends, followers, you know, people you're in contact with that are going, that you can actually solicit. And it's kind of an interesting kind of stepping stone point to for people. It seems like for independent creators to get that. And I think you're a good example of that. Not that it's, you know, by necessarily, you know, some sort of design like, oh, I'm going to make all these friends and then I'm going to ask them for money. Because that's not what I'm implying. But, you know, it's partly having a small, you know, a small body of work initially, but having a large enough group of people that you converse with, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I've told people before, like, because, you know, I've had a lot of people asking me for advice and stuff, and I'm like, if the book that you're going to Kickstarter is your very first book, and you have, like, just joined social media, like, I don't think your odds, the odds are going to be in your favor. Like, I don't think it's going to happen just because, like, you're right, you do need a little bit of a foundation of, you know, friends, a fan base, you know. Mm-hmm. And to have a few books already under your belt, you know, is definitely, like, a plus. Like, oh, okay, this guy, he's done this before. He's not, like, you know. I mean, yeah, and you do see a lot of people on Kickstarter. They're just like, I have this idea. Help me make it happen. Like, no, dude, like, we don't know who you are.
Right.
You know. And, yeah, so it is kind of tricky, and, you know, it's hard to tell exactly when, you know, you cross over from, you know, maybe not having enough of a fan base or enough of a chance to, like, okay, yeah, I could probably do this. Like, a lot of people were telling me to do Kickstarters with my first book, which was called Extinct. It was, like, a werewolf teens fighting werewolves comic, like, taking place in the 80s. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was a lot of fun. I mean, I'm proud of that book, but, you know, I don't think – I mean – I don't know. I really don't think I could have pulled it off at the time, you know, I don't think I was on Twitter at the time. I probably just had like a few hundred Facebook friends, and they're mostly from like when I was in a band and stuff. So I don't think it would have worked out if I did it like 3 years ago. And I mean, I probably could have had a successful one before Doc Unknown, but I don't know. I really think that putting Doc Unknown out on my own, like, was kind of like the clincher, like, okay, yeah, you know, I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably have to get to a point too where you feel that the product you're pushing out there is worth the money of the people that are going to support it too.
Yeah, I mean, like with Doc Unknown, I mean, I've felt like Doc Unknown was a home run, like the moment I came up with the name. Like, like I had the idea to do this kind of book that would take place in a world where, like, you know, there'd be like, you know, half snake, you know, half man gangsters and ghosts, you know, and just kind of like mystery and magic and mobsters and all that kind of stuff that I wanted to, that I eventually put in Doc Unknown. I had this idea to do. You know, I was kind of influenced by, like, Astro City. Have you read Astro
Sure.
City?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so I was like, you know, and so basically at first it was going to be more like, you know, it would have been called Gate City, and it just would have been about these, you know, these people inhabiting the city or whatever. But then I just ended up focusing on Doc Unknown. And, you know, I had sent Ryan, like, you know, what he would look like the character description and stuff. But he didn't have a name. I didn't know what I was going to call the book. I didn't know what I was going to call the main character. And when I actually came up with, you know, the name Doc Unknown and Googled it right away to make sure it wasn't already like a comic or something, and it wasn't, I was like, how is it not taken? Like, it sounds like it sounds like a real comic. Like, it sounds like something that's real. I don't know.
Well, it was weird. It was meant for you.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, man. But yeah, so like, yeah, I mean, I felt like, I was like, you know, when I started pitching it to publishers, I was like, someone's going to bite. And when I started getting, like, you know, either rejection emails or just like no emails at all, I was like, I mean, I felt like I was one of those people on American Idol that can't sing, and then they go on American Idol, say they think they can sing, like their family's been telling them that they're like the best singer, and they go on American Idol and they're like, you can't sing. You're like, what? What do you mean I can't sing? Like, I was like, wait, is this not good? Is it? And I refused to believe that there wasn't an audience for Doc Unknown, so I was like, you know, man, I'm gonna just do it myself. I'm gonna do whatever it takes to get this done. And, you know, like that summer was just all crazy. And but I knew as soon as I posted like the first cover, and people just like ate it up, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I know what I'm doing, man. I know this is good. So, and yeah, but going back to Andrea's earlier question about meeting people at cons and stuff, that back to Kickstarter, mm-hmm. like that's like, yeah, it's been really cool, like. It's, you know, that just happened like in New Orleans back in February, and then in Emerald City, you know, people coming up like, hey, I backed your Kickstarter. Like, oh, that's cool, man. And I feel bad because there was like 200, we had like 200 people back it. And so I'm not like, I really don't remember all the names.
You mean like a book with all the faces and all the names?
I'm all, you lying sack of shit.
you have the Doc Unknown like yearbook where you look it up, see what our Kickstarter quote is, you know.
Yeah, yeah, like the thank you list in the back. Uh-huh. But yeah, it is really weird to just have people that I'm not, you know, either Facebook friends or that I follow on Twitter say that they back the Kickstarter. I'm like, man, that's cool. I mean, and you know, on Kickstarter, it tells you like where your pledges are coming from. Mm-hmm. And the last Kickstarter, you know, the greatest percentage were from Facebook. And this time, like almost like more than half, like maybe like 70% of the backers are coming just straight from Kickstarter. So that's also like kind of cool to see, you know, like I don't necessarily, you know, have to rely just on social media. Like,
so
Kickstarter,
does that mean like the people that backed the previous ones are coming back and backing the new ones?
Yeah. There's a lot of people like that too. I think that might be the most popular reward at this point is the, all the books reward, you know, Doc Unknown Volume 1, Boss mm-hmm. Snake, and now Doc Volume 2. That's actually, I think that might be the, so yeah, there's a lot of new people jumping in, but yeah, so yeah, it's going really great. I'm like super super happy.
So let's talk about dreams in the future then.
Did you say let's talk about Jack Kirby?
Well, hang on then about that. We're gonna get to Jack Kirby. I have a question. Don't worry.
Okay. Now what do you say? Dreams of the future.
Dreams in the future. So what are your comic dreams like? Like, what's your 5-year plan in a way? I like asking this now. Are you content with working and doing comics like on the side and keeping the day job, or is the dream to move into comics full time? And if that's the dream, are you interested in doing the self-published work that you've been doing? Do you have a dream for working for Marvel and DC at some point? What does the future hold for you? Ideally.
Honestly, I would want to be more akin to someone like Robert Kirkman or Mike Mignola, someone who can do their own book and find success with it.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of problems with Marvel and DC. I'm not necessarily completely opposed to the idea of getting paid to, write, Batman or, or Doctor Strange or something. I'm so jealous of Frank, Five Ghost Rider.
Frank Barber.
He landed that Doctor Strange gig. I'm like, oh my God, I would fucking kill someone to write Doctor Strange. So at least just a one shot or something.
So you do have Marvel and DC dreams. It's just under the right circumstances.
Yeah, it's not necessarily I meet a lot of people that are like, oh, well, I'm going to buy this self-published comic from you, and one day I'm going to sell it when you're like writing for DC or Marvel. And I'm like, you. Just go ahead and stop holding your breath. don't hold your breath for that, because I really don't see DC Marvel thing happening. I would rather just if I could sell a few thousand copies of Doc Unknown every time it came out, I think I'd be happy with that. I think I'm different from a lot of other up and coming. Comic writers or whatever, because I don't want to quit my day job.
Mm-hmm.
I have good benefits and it's a super easy job. And maybe if I was younger, I would have been I wish I could be a full-time comic writer. But I'm married and I have a kid. And so, I see all these horror stories about older comic book guys, needing help, because they don't have insurance or they just can't find work. A lot of those older guys, they can't get hired anymore.
I even look at somebody Charles Soule, who, he's writing, 8 books or something, 8 or 9 books, but he's still a full-time lawyer, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, you see that, so you see that with people writing Marvel or DC books, that they're still keeping their day jobs, too.
Yeah, it's just that the comic book industry doesn't have, a outstanding record as far as taking care of their own.
Yeah.
It's getting better now just because people have seen what has happened to the older creators, how they were treated. So I think it's a lot harder for comic book companies to get away with a lot of the shit they did.
Mm-hmm.
In the past,
wrong with being pragmatic about it at this point. Nobody is coming to you with piles of money. And maybe if they were, it would be okay to change your mind. But it's fine to say what you're doing right now is balancing your life responsibilities and your day job and stuff and doing the comic stream on the side and making it work. So I don't think you have to be sheepish about that.
Right on. I just, it's weird because I've just talked to so many other, guys that are just I'm definitely you see a lot of guys and they are definitely climbing a ladder to where they can do this full time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not opposed to trying to get work for hire stuff. I had actually got offered a work for hire thing last year that would have been, I can talk about it, I don't care, but I had gotten offered, to do, one of the villain micro series things for IDW, the Ninja Turtles.
Oh, huh. Yeah.
I had gotten, I just got an email saying, we're going to do this stuff. And, they kind of asked me to pitch a story or whatever. And I did. And the guy liked it. He said it was solid and everything, but they went with someone else. And just that whole period was just a roller coaster. I got so stoked because there's not many licensed properties that I would want to work on. But Ninja Turtles is definitely the first one that I would.
Uh-huh.
Most people my age, I grew up loving Ninja Turtles, had all the toys and everything. And now my son is into Ninja Turtles because of the new show. And I was just oh my God, if I could be able to say I wrote Ninja Turtles, But yeah, so when I didn't get I got super depressed and I was just I started to think about the effect that kind of freelancing, even though I barely even not even was in it, that kind of world would have on me, like as far as like my emotions or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I was like, I don't want to be this guy who's just like, you know, biting my nails, wondering if this is going to happen and what's the next thing. And, you know, I didn't want that kind of stress, and I didn't want to be focusing on what I wasn't doing or what I wanted to do. I wanted to kind of more focus on like what I have done and what like I can do, you know, like, I don't know. So that's why, I mean, that's another reason why I was just like, you know, I'm just going to do my own thing. You know, there's the tools to do it, you know, the internet and Comixology and Kickstarter, like to where I could do this and not have to worry about like, you know, that kind of that stress or whatever.
I really appreciate how like candid you are about that, honestly.
Well, no, I don't have any like overlords. I'm not working for any publishers, so it's like I can fucking say some shit.
Yes.
And like, I don't know, like I saw someone, and I mean, I consider them a friend, but like I saw someone complaining about like false modesty in comics, and I was like, you know, if I had to name like the problems that are going on with this industry, false modesty would not even crack the top 10. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I'm like, are you seriously complaining about false modesty? Like, I'd rather talk about, you know, the rampant sexism that's going on in this fucking industry, or the way they treat, you know, old freelancers and stuff. I'm like, there's like so many more problems.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like embarrassing sometimes, like, you know, like I'll meet up with a friend and they're like, hey, let's hang out, get lunch. I'm like, cool, well, meet me at the combo store, because, you know, that's usually one of the only days that I can do anything is on Wednesday. And, you know, so they're kind of walking around the shop with me. It might be someone who, you know, doesn't really go to comic shops that much. And they see all that stuff that, like, all those, like, grim fairy tale books. Uh-huh. And all that. And, like, I'm sorry that you have to see that. Like, I'm like, I promise. And then, like, my wife, you know, there was a couple times in the past where, like, I would have previews. And I'd be like, this is, you know, previews is cool because you can look through and you kind of see what's happening or what's going to come out in a couple months. And, you know, it's cool because, you know, you won't miss it, you know,
mm-hmm.
like you can pre-order it and stuff. And so I'm like, you want to flip through it and kind of like, you know, see if you see anything that you like and stuff. Like, she, you know, she's read like Sandman and some other books like Hellboy and stuff. So like, she was flipping through it and like, I could just see her face, you know, a lot of that like crossed and stuff like that. Like,
right.
Or like, you know, a lot of that stuff, like so many of those covers, it's just like, sorry, I'm just going off.
I like that. I think that's a valid, I think that's a good, like, real life observation of how, especially, you know, I don't know if we're the people to kind of talk about this or really have, you know, we observe it third hand, but women don't necessarily feel welcomed into the comics industry.
Hi.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Third fucking hand.
You know, I wish we had someone here. Like, I mean, nice to have like a female like on the show that has some sort of insight into this. It's just so hard to find chicks that'll talk about this kind of stuff. You know, most of them just, they're drunk or they, you know, they can't carry a conversation. No, I understand, and we've talked about this, but I can only talk about it from the outside.
I know.
So
basically my point was like, there's way more, you know, you were talking about like, I don't know, whatever, I'll shut up.
No,
Fabian, I'd rather listen to you than Aaron at this point.
Right on.
But I see the same thing, like going into like, you know, my local store is, it's right like next to the college campus, and there's, you know, there's a lot of, I've noticed more that there's a lot of college girls that'll come in on Wednesdays to buy comics, but, you know, I don't want them to be turned off to comics by some of the comics that are targeted to male audiences, which are still probably, you know, at least half are going to have females portrayed, even if it's just the cover, to attract a male audience, because men are still 90% of the people buying comics.
I don't think that's a true statistic anymore, Aaron. I really don't.
You don't think 90% on a Wednesday?
I don't think it is. I'm not going to look it up for you right now. I'll look it up and we can talk about it on Wednesday when we record the rest of the show. But I don't think that 90% is accurate. And I don't think that's been the case for a while.
Well, I'm old. And
back, you are.
back at my day, we'd sit at the comic shop smoking our cigarette, our cigars, drinking our whiskey, reading our Xenoscope comics, and we liked it that
way.
I mean, I'm not going to say that there aren't shops that are like super unwelcoming to women, but there are also shops that are super unwelcoming to younger readers of, you know, all genders and orientations. And I think that it just, like, the industry as a whole is years behind where it needs to be. And we've talked about that with a number of different people, and we've all talked about it kind of amongst ourselves. But I mean, it's not gonna fix itself. The shift has to happen from within, and it has to happen from the younger generation primarily. And it's happening, but it's not gonna be fast. It's like woefully slow. It's so fucking frustrating how slow it is. And there's gonna be a lot of like trauma in that transition. But I don't think it's nearly as bad as 90%. But, you know,
and
I
say that, I'm talking more of people going to a comic store.
Hey, Fabian, how's it going?
That's fine. We can debate this some other time. But I'm talking about I think you're right that I think the number is far different when you're talking digital and online purchases.
Okay.
That's a much safer environment to pick and choose what you want to, you know, what you want to read and to crowdsource what's good. You know, tied to, you know, Marvel or DC. Or Xenoscope or, you know, Avatar or something.
Right. While we're talking about that, like, I don't know. I guess it just takes all different kinds, you know, like some people are into these kind of comics and these kind of comics, but like, man, I just don't understand the mind that like sees those Xenoscope books and is like, yes, this is my book. Like, that shit's so dumb. I don't know, man.
But it's, you know, it's like any kind of literature. It's the same thing. Like, I could look at a romance novel on a shelf and say like, oh, this is so dumb. Who's going to read this? But there's a group of people that love romance novels, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And that's a good thing about comics. I mean, like, a lot of people don't understand that is that there is a comic for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people just think, oh, comics, superheroes, you know, and then,
right.
But there is like, you know, sci-fi and, you know, there's, you know, kind of quieter, like indie coming of age type books and stuff. So like, but for the most part, I don't have any interest in having fans that read Xenoscope read my stuff. Like, I'm going to check my email. It's like, so-and-so dropped their pledge, canceled their pledge. Yeah.
I think I used to be a lot more, judgmental of those books, but I still am in some ways, but I understand the entertainment value of them. It's not the kind of books that I gravitate towards, but I can understand like being into that kind of stuff. And especially I think a lot of new readers, and I would say in those cases, they're mostly male, but not always. It's nice to look at like a well-drawn, even though it's not anatomically correct, like it's still, you know, just like anime in a way too. Like anime is not anatomically correct, but the way it's drawn, it, you know, evokes emotion, and it's, you know, it's meant to be scintillating.
What kind of emotion is that, Aaron?
It's just like there's still guys that go out and buy Playboy or Penthouse or anything like that. You know, it's like whatever.
Just for the interviews, just for the articles, man.
But that's fine. We don't have to be ashamed of sexuality. It's all good.
I have a question for Fabian. Can I ask my question?
Yeah, sure.
Well, I think it actually isn't super out of left field, given what we were just discussing, because it goes back to your thoughts on the way that you're presenting the content, like the genre that you've sort of chosen. I read an interview where we were talking about this idea of there being really no monsters, no real unknown in the modern age because of technology. And I think that's really intriguing. So I'm curious if you have read or seen anything recently that does capture some of that. It's not whimsy, because that's not dark enough, but that feel of like a shadowy reality, but not within the pre-war era. And I think that you have to go like almost dystopian to find that.
You mean like in real life? Like,
yeah, like what else?
That I've...
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. This is kind of, I don't know if this lines up with what you're saying, but like, there was this article that I was reading recently about how, how, scientists had kind of figured out that, or there's like a running theory that like what we perceive as like reality is actually like a hologram. Like all of the universe is like a hologram. Okay. And like, when I read stuff like that, I'm just like, okay, yeah, maybe we haven't figured everything out. And and so it is, and it, you know, space is just like so, you know, unknowable and stuff and infinite, like, and like there was another article I was reading about, they had kind of, they had seen like the waves, I forgot what they called them, like this wave that happened when the Big Bang took place. They kind of like, I guess these like waves that like went out, and they actually like found evidence of them. And I don't know, when I read stuff like that, I'm just like, wow, man, like there's so much like stuff that we don't know about, like, you know, reality. And
so in that case, you're going actually like back to science as your, as like what's kind of making you excited about what is actually not known in the world.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I guess, awesome. I mean, I don't consider myself like, you know, someone who's like super, super like into science, you know, like I know that's like a thing now. People are just like, fucking science. And like, you know, people, I mean, like, that's cool. I just like, I guess I never felt like I was like smart enough to be able to like, be like really into it. I'd be like, well, I'd rather, you know, read about, you know, like monsters or whatever. But like, you know, like someone was posting a, they're like, oh, they found the chupacabra. And I was like, dude, that's like a hairless raccoon. Like, you know, like, like chupacabra is like one of the like, you know, more like recent, like kind of monsters or whatever that turned out to like, you know, I'm just saying like in the modern times, like I just don't think that there's anything like that, especially because of technology and video and stuff. Like, you know, back in the day, like people would have to draw what they saw. They're like, I saw this thing, and they'd be drawing an alligator, but like when they drew it, it didn't look like an alligator, it looked like a dragon or something. So like people are like, oh, okay, so this monster exists, and it's like, it's not a monster, it's just a fucking crocodile or whatever.
Right.
I don't know.
So if
did
you think about
answer
it,
your question?
No, it does. It's like, if you go bigger than that, like much bigger than monsters, and you start thinking, like beyond globally, almost, like universally, right? Like space. Right. That's full of things that we're still essentially drawing. We don't have, we don't have the, like, just to use your analogy, we don't have the ability to actually confirm it. And so there's a lot of possibility there for fiction to be influenced by the unknown of, like space. Right.
Yeah. And it's really weird too, because I mean, to kind of, you know, bring it back to comics for a little bit, but, like a week ago, an artist friend of mine, Alexis DeRitt, had, asked me if I wanted to work on a pitch with him, and it was like an outer space thing. And like, I'd kind of been wanting to do like an outer space thing, and I kind of do still have plans to do my own space thing, maybe next year. But, yeah, like a lot of the stuff that I, well, the, a lot of the stuff I was talking about or that we were just talking about, is going to kind of inform, you know, this basic outline that I've been working on for the, for our comic and everything. And, just that, you know, like you said, like, it's almost like nothing I've ever written takes place like in a modern time. Like it all takes place, like a lot of stuff I wrote takes place before cell phones. Cause I think that cell phones can get us out of mostly most situations. You know, like if something happens, we can just like call 911 or we can Google, like, what the hell is that thing? I was like, let me Google it. Let me take a picture of it and send it. And, you know, like you watch like Seinfeld, and that's like before cell phones. And so like so many of the problems that they had could have been solved with cell phones.
Right.
And, and so like, you know, if they had cell phones, like it wouldn't have been much, you know, there wouldn't have been conflict. There wouldn't have been problems to overcome. And so that's like, you know, that's like the basis of story, you know, like, you know, someone, you, you introduce your characters, you introduce, you know, something in their way and how they're going to overcome it or whatever, the conflict. And so that's why I think that's one of the reasons I'm excited about, you know, like Doc Unknown, because it takes place, you know, at a time when I think that we were just like, you know, in between what we did know and what we, you know, or what we didn't know and what we did know. And then with the outer space stuff that I'm writing now, yeah, it's like, oh, well, I can just write anything because no one knows, you know. And there's going to be some really, you know, weird stuff in the new comic and everything.
Nice. I like weird.
Yeah, yeah, it's cool.
So that brings me to probably my last question. So what are you reading these days or watching? You know, what kind of comics, books, television, movies, media in general? What's inspiring you right now? What entertaining you? You know, basically, just tell me about your current love affair with Jack Kirby.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably something that, you know, anybody that's friends with me on Facebook or Twitter has kind of noticed in the past few months. Like this kind of like near obsession that's been going on. You know, obviously I knew who Jack Kirby was, you know, before, you know, last year.
But you kind of go down a Kirby rabbit hole once you start kind of peeling back the layers though, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like the thing was like, you know, I remember being a kid, like maybe 13, 14 years old. And, I think in the back of like, cause I was reading mostly DC stuff. When he died, there was like this, like, you know, this full page, you know, thing just talking about who he was and, you know, rest in peace and all that stuff. And I just remember being like, man, he must have been someone pretty important uh-huh. for all these books to have this in the back of their pages or whatever. And so I remember that was kind of like the first moment where I was, like, you know, where I knew his name and, you know, I didn't know that he was, you know, the guy who had created so many of the characters that were still being published. And, you know, and then of course when I got into comics and, you know, people post links and people post articles, I'd read like this, this like interview that he had done, a while back. And, I remember reading it and just feeling like a kinship almost. Like he was an artist of course, but I really felt like he was like a family man and like, mm-hmm. Providing for his kids was like, you know, the main basis, but behind, you know, drawing so much, you know, he had to put food on the table, he had to keep a roof over his family's heads. And all that stuff, I think, kind of just, like, started making me, like, want to, like, do more research, I guess, and just find out more. And then I think it was, like, towards the end of last year, like, because, I mean, I'd always seen his art and been like, oh, okay, that's the 60s, you know, like, it was just right. So synonymous with, like, 60s, and, like, I didn't really even, almost, like, dismissed it. I mean, mm-hmm. should you say, but like, just kind of like, oh, that's old, you know?
Well, it's easy like, because you know, it's so like culturally ubiquitous too. It's like you look at anything Kirby and you just associate it with the time period because he kind of is that time period too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so like, and then I had a friend who had went through this phase, like for the longest time I was getting like, cause I was more about like, what's going on now? What can I like take part in now? It was the same way when I was in bands and stuff. Like, I would hate when people would get, like, really stoked about, like, old bands. I'm like, man, who cares about that band? I ain't around anymore. Like, you should be into this band because you can go see them next week. Or you can support them now. You know, like, it was almost that same kind of parallel where I was like, you know, like, you know, another thing that people probably have picked up on is that I'm, like, really, really into, like, Hellboy and, like, Mike Mignola and the whole Mignolaverse or whatever. And so that was very much my jam, and it still is like my biggest jam because it is currently going on. But
well, and I think if you look at I think if you look at Mignola's artwork, especially as it evolved, it's very there's a lot of Kirby in Mignola too.
Oh yeah, see yeah, and that's the other thing. Like you, sometimes you get into a band or you get into something, and then you're like, this is the best thing ever, and then right. you start to kind of see like the influences, like who influenced him, you know, mm-hmm. or them.
Yeah.
And yeah, totally Jack Kirby, you know, a huge influence on Mignola. And so that was also part of it. It all just kind of started coming together like towards the end of last year where I started to see the art more often and it's something that was just kind of clicking, you know, and like a small little itch where I was like, oh, well, maybe I'll try and pick up one of his books, you know, cause I was like, how can I be like a comic book fan and not actually own any books with Jack Kirby art? Like he was like such a part of the industry. Like all I had was like, mostly stuff from like the 80s and up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And,
not the best stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not so, the worst though. Actually, I kind of went back and read like Captain Victory, like a few of those, like it's pretty Kirby. It's just a late, you know, it's just later Kirby.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, no, I love Captain Victory. I have like from what I've read, I only have the first two issues, uh-huh. but I'm actually watching a lot right now on eBay, but, not like right now.
As you're talking
like, to
us.
I'm not looking at the computer right now. No, but yeah, so yeah, that's pretty much how it started. I was like, you know, I started kind of, it started to make sense to me and like, there was like this Tumblr that was like Kirby double page spread.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think that was pretty much like the final nail where I was like, oh my God, like I need to get this stuff. And so, yeah, it's been like pretty, you know, I went from like 0 to 60, like over the past few months where I'm just like every convention I do, I go track down a bunch of stuff that I want. And I have a pretty, I think I have a pretty nice Kirby collection at this point. And a lot of it's Thor, because Thor is like the first comic book I ever read.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have like a soft spot for Thor for being the comic that kind of like, you know, got me into this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as like, so yeah, Jack Kirby, I'm really into Jack Kirby right now. I'm really into the Mignola-verse, obviously. BPRD is my favorite comic. What else? Oh, a lot of the Image stuff, you know, like Manhattan Project and Saga. Five Ghosts, obviously. I mean, I was reading Five Ghosts before the whole, you know, Doc Unknown backup. So, you know, it was just like a really big, you know, like honor. Like, oh my God, I get to be in that book, you know, in a roundabout way.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm actually trying to like get to where I can maybe skim down my pull list because it's getting kind of ridiculous. But I'm spending like way too much money. But as far as like, yeah, so as far as comics, like, you know, mostly all creator-owned stuff. I don't really read any licensed properties anymore. I think the last one I was reading was Ninja Turtles. Mm. I actually dropped that recently. But all creator-owned stuff. And as far as TV shows, I'm excited for Game of Thrones tonight.
Sure.
And True Detective, you know, when that was going on, I was very much one of those people that was like, True Detective, you know, all caps.
Yeah, me too. It's
But I wasn't one of those people that was like, you know, hoping for like weird, crazy stuff to happen. I thought True Detective's like strength was its character interactions. Like, mm-hmm. you know, the things that these people were saying to each other and doing to each other were like way more interesting than, you know, maybe some monster showing up at the end or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was very fine with the conclusion. Very fulfilling.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and so was I. And a lot of people were like, oh, that's it. I'm like, man, you guys, I don't know.
Go back and watch it again, guys. I think you missed it.
No matter like how good something is, man, someone's got to shit on it. Like,
yeah.
No matter, it's like that's just. I mean, and I wasn't aware of that as much until I like, you know, got a Facebook account or a Twitter account. Like, how can someone be so fucking wrong about anything? Like, man, did you watch the same thing I watched? Did you read the same thing I read? Like, I can't believe you people, man.
That's the other edge of the sword when it comes to the internet. There's always going to be someone who wants to write a crappy review.
Yeah.
Turns out the world is full of idiots and assholes.
Yeah, I think that's why I get like so stoked about like making friends, I guess, because like if I can actually like meet someone that has the same kind of like, you know, the same kind of like enthusiasm mm-hmm. for like stuff that I like, I'm like, yeah, you fucking get it. You know,
yeah.
Like, isn't it cool that we can like this cool thing? I don't know.
Right. No,
it sounds
totally,
really silly
totally
me to say,
agree.
I don't know. Because there is just like so much, like, you know, so many people are, I don't know, man, they're just wrong. Like it's possible just to be wrong. I try not to think like, oh, there's no universal truth, but man, there is. There's certain things that are, there. You know, like, oh, there's no universal evil, but like, dude, it is evil to like hurt kids, and it's evil, you know, like,
right.
I don't know, anyway.
Yeah, two universal truths. You should. It's wrong to hurt kids, and it's wrong not to like True Detective.
Those, I mean, there's a bunch of other ones.
Those
but
are no, those are the only two constants we can cling to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Fabian. This was great. It was excellent to be able to talk to you more thoroughly than we did last week. Congratulations on Doc Unknown Volume 2. That's very exciting. Any last words of wisdom that you want to share?
No, I mean, you know, you guys, I think by the time this airs, I think the Kickstarter will be over, right?
That's right. Yep. The Kickstarter ends on Tuesday, right? So, but just as a reminder for anybody, you can find the backups in Five Ghosts and then on Comixology, yes?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, if you've agreed with anything I said or were entertained in any way, you can, you know, add me on Facebook or follow me on Twitter, and I'll keep talking about this stuff. Well, I talk about like pizza a lot, you know, like pizza, Jack Kirby,
global shipping conspiracies.
Right.
Yeah,
probably Game of Thrones after this evening.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Multifaceted.
But yeah, other than that, like, I think Well, like I said, I mentioned earlier, my friend Alexis and I are working on a sci-fi pitch right now. It's called Space Riders, and yeah, I'm really excited.
Posted that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's been posting like his cover process and stuff,
yeah.
And it's really cool. And yeah, so we're gonna you know work up a pitch and everything. You know, hopefully,
sweet.
You know, fingers crossed that a publisher picks it up. Because as much as I love you know Comixology Submit, as much as I love Kickstarter and everything, like I kind of like you were talking about my 5-year plan earlier. Like I kind of don't want to be like the poster boy for self-publishing. Like. For, you know, 5 years from now, like,
right.
I like, I would very much like to be one of, you know, like, a lot of my friends are doing books with, like, Dark Horse or, you know, Boom or Monkey Brain. Like, it'd be really cool to have at least, like, one book that I didn't have to completely, you know, fund through
mm-hmm.
Kickstarter on my own.
mm-hmm.
And just, you know, just to get a, you know, like, a wider audience. Because really all I really want to do is, like, tell these fun stories and have as many people, you know, read them. I mean, I'm not saying like I want like a million fans, but I definitely think that there are a lot of people that are into the same things I'm into and would dig the stuff that I write.
Right on. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fine. Yeah. We'll accept that.
Approved.
Yeah, approved. Well, thank you again, Fabian, for joining us on the couch this week. And thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. And thanks everyone else for listening to another episode of Comics Therapy. Don't forget to pre-order your comics at your local shop and subscribe to them digitally. And you know what? Support them on Kickstarter too. Show notes and other details are on our site, as always, on comicstherapy.com. Until next week, we'll talk to you later.
You didn't read through that, did you?
No, I didn't.
This is what happens when we take a week off, Aaron.
Oh boy. Never again.
Awesome.
Yep.
Thank you, Fabian.
Caught you knocking at my cellar door. I love you, baby, can I have some more? Ooh, the damage done. I hit the city and I lost my band. I watched the needle take another.